The Behavioral Corner is produced in cooperation with Retreat Behavioral Health, where healing happens. Hi and welcome. I'm Steve Martorano, and this is the Behavioral Corner. You're invited to hang with us as we discuss the ways we live today, the choices we make, the things we do, and how they affect our health and well-being. So you're on the corner, the Behavioral Corner. Please hang around a while. Hi, everybody. Welcome again to the Behavioral Corner. It's me, your favorite neighborhood corner hanger, Steve Martorano. Welcome aboard. If you're just finding us for the first time, simply put, we're a podcast about everything because everything affects our behavioral health. The whole shoot and match is made possible by our underwriting partners, Retreat Behavioral Health. You'll hear more about them down the road. So let me welcome our guest right away. Dr. Judith Beck joins us. Dr. Beck is, along with her dad, it's Aaron? Yeah, Aaron Beck, co-founder of the Beck Institute for Cognitive Behavioral Therapy, a topic that's very interesting to me anyway, and I hope you'll find it as well. Dr. Beck, thanks for joining us on the program.
Oh, my pleasure.
So what piqued my interest in this was a recent New Yorker article that I know you've seen that's entitled, Can Cognitive Behavioral Therapy Change Our Minds? And in the subtitle, they say that premise is predicated on an unlikely idea. And the unlikely idea is what we're going to get into today with Dr. Beck. Before we get into the weeds on the therapy and that unlikely idea, when we talk about cognition, can you define cognition for us?
Sure. Cognition really means thinking. And there are two levels of thinking that we particularly address in this kind of psychotherapy called cognitive behavior therapy. One are the thoughts that just seem to pop up into our heads, the automatic thoughts. And we're particularly interested in the automatic thoughts that lead to an unhelpful reaction. So, and we're particularly interested in the unhelpful thoughts that are inaccurate. You know, most of us go through the day and we don't think too much about our thinking. We may have some odd thoughts that pop up into our minds. But if we find that all of a sudden we're having a negative emotion, we're feeling sad or angry or anxious, it's probably because we have just had a thought. And the thoughts that pop up into our minds, as opposed to the ones that we want to be thinking, we call automatic thoughts because they seem to just pop up automatically. Now, when people are under a lot of stress or when they have a psychological condition or a psychiatric disorder, at least some of their thoughts are likely to be inaccurate and unhelpful. And one of the things that we do in CBT is to help people look for these automatic thoughts that pop up when either they're experiencing a negative emotion or if they find that they're behaving in a way that is not in alignment with their values and their goals. Mm-hmm. And then we help people learn how to identify these thoughts and then how to ask themselves a series of questions to find out how accurate and helpful the thoughts really are.
Well, that's why we wanted you here, because that is the thorough and complete understanding of it. My experience, I talk a lot about talk. This falls under the broad umbrella of talk therapy, correct?
Correct.
Okay. Well, and that comes up very often when we do mental health programs here and substance abuse programs and all of that. So we talk about it a lot. And as the layperson in the room here, my simple description of CBT is, well, if you change the way you think, you'll change the way you behave. Is that pretty much it?
Yeah, that really is it. You know, if you think about it, you know, here's a typical everyday situation. I'm trying to eat in a healthy way. And I see, I go downstairs and I open the freezer to pull out something to defrost for dinner, and I see some ice cream. Well, if I have the thought, wow, that ice cream looks good, but I'm going to wait till after dinner to have some, then my behavior will probably be to close the freezer and not eat it. On the other hand, if my thought is, wow, that ice cream looks really good, and I know I'm not supposed to have it, but I really want it, to hell with it, I'm going to have it, chances are my behavior will be to pull it out and start eating it. So the way that we think highly influences not only how we feel, but also our behavior.
Where is the mind located, as opposed to, we know where our brain is.
Yes.
Well, where is the mind located?
Well, we think the mind is really located in our brain, but there are a lot of different parts of our body that are constantly giving information to our brain.
Yeah. The example I use a lot is if you're looking at a picture or a movie of a sumptuous meal, and it just looks the most delicious thing you've ever had, and you're suddenly hungry. You become hungry from looking at it.
Yes.
And then a bowling ball falls on your foot, and suddenly your consciousness has shifted to your foot. So your mind is sort of down there now. It's what leads to the New Yorker notion, or at least premise, that all of this CBT is predicated on what they say may be an unlikely idea, that our irrational behavior can be solved by the very thing that caused the irrational thoughts are causing the irrational behavior, and yet we're supposed to use the same tool, the mind,
right,
to change that. Well, I know it doesn't strike you as an unlikely idea that we can be rational. Why would the New Yorker think it might be irrational?
Well, I think most of us go through the day just not thinking too much about our thoughts. And we might be much more keenly aware of how we're feeling and what we're doing. You know, every once in a while, I'm sure most people have had this experience where you have a thought such as, oh, I'll never get everything done. And then you look down at the list and you prioritize it and you think to yourself, well, no, I guess I will. I'm just going to have to work really hard for the next few days, but it will all get done. And that, in essence, is what we're trying to do for at least part of CBT, is to identify the thoughts that could lead to unhelpful behavior or negative emotion and do a quick reality check on them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and what we need to do, particularly when people have a psychiatric disorder or some kind of psychological condition, is to teach them the skills, because it's not intuitively obvious how it is that you figure out what you're thinking. It's not intuitively obvious about how you do a reality check.
Mm-hmm.
And so at every session, we at the beginning of the session, we do a lot of things. But one of the things that we do is to ask our clients, well, what goals do you have? What goal or goals do you have for this week? Or what problems are you having that you want my help in solving? And then in the context of discussing specific problems or goals, we look for the thoughts that are going to help people live in alignment with their values and their goals, and then the ones that were probably bothersome to them that have really gotten in the way, that have interfered with their being able to reach those goals.
Mm-hmm.
And then we teach them how to evaluate their thinking.
On the Institute's website, which I recommend people who want to know more about this therapy, check out. It's the beckinstitute.org. You have a kind of flow chart, which is as clear as can be. It was a great aid in me trying to see what you guys call the cognitive mind.
Yes, cognitive model. Yes.
Cognitive model, yes. Can you take us through that chart?
Sure. So most people, again, think it's situations that directly lead to their reaction. So someone might think, I'm so anxious because my boss is putting pressure on me. Or I feel so sad because my mother can't come to Thanksgiving. But it's not actually the situation that directly impacts how we feel and what we do, and sometimes how our bodies react, but rather it's our interpretation of the situation. The woman who, or the man who has the thought, my boss is putting a lot of pressure on me and that's why I'm feeling anxious, it's probably what is closer to reality is that she's having the thought, if I don't get it all done, he might fire me. Because another person in the situation might actually feel angry because he's had an angry, she's had an angry thought, such as, my boss shouldn't do that. This is unfair.
Some others might be motivated.
That's right. So others might have a, it's conceivable someone might have a positive reaction, feel glad, thinking, well, finally, my boss is paying attention to what we really need to do to get this company to produce what it has to produce.
So in those situations, when a situation arises,
yeah,
the problem occurs when the emotion attached to the situation is negative.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, there are certain situations where almost anybody would have a negative reaction. So what we're looking for are situations in which people have kind of a more extreme emotional reaction, much more than the situation calls for. So CBT can't and doesn't want to get rid of all negative emotion. If you get the only way to get rid of all a negative emotion is also to get rid of all positive emotion, is to become kind of like a robot. So we're looking for those situations that are connected to someone's goals and values and aspirations in life. And where their thinking has gotten them into trouble, posed obstacles to helping them get to where they want to be.
Mm-hmm. What types of disorders are indicated for this kind of therapy?
Well, I'm glad you asked. And the whole reason that people should learn more about CBT is because there have been over 2,000 outcome trials that show that it's effective for a huge range of conditions. So it's been shown to be effective for a large number of psychiatric disorders, such as depression, bipolar disorder, all kinds of anxiety disorders, eating disorders, substance abuse, even an adaptation of CBT called recovery-oriented cognitive therapy for people with serious mental health issues such as schizophrenia or bipolar disorder. It's also been shown to be effective for a lot of psychological conditions like marital problems, couples problems, family problems, procrastination, test anxiety, public speaking phobias, and things like that.
And each of those are different. And I know you at the Institute, you make a particular point that one size does not fit all in this kind of therapy, although the basics would apply to every situation. Since we're talking about the way we think, we don't all think the same.
That's exactly right. And if something else I'd like to point out is, we've so far been talking mostly about negative thoughts and psychopathology, mm-hmm. but in recovery-oriented cognitive therapy, which I mentioned is an adaptation of CBT for people with serious mental health conditions, the focus is much more on increasing people's positive thinking and positive beliefs, much more so than correct negative thinking. And the principles of recovery-oriented cognitive therapy are starting to now be integrated into more standard CBT. So in addition to focusing on negative thoughts, negative emotions, and so forth, we're also focusing on positive beliefs, positive thoughts, and positive emotions.
You believe you can get better at thinking positively and having positive outcomes? Not unlike going to the gym and getting your body in shape by practicing a workout routine?
Yeah, that's what the research shows.
Yeah.
The research shows is when you engage in positive thinking, so I'll just take as one example of gratitude, that it really does improve people's sense of well-being.
Yeah. And these are things that are, they seem anyway, to be in shorter and shorter supply. Things like gratitude and humility and empathy. You know, lacking those things, I guess, would make open the floodgates to all kinds of negative thoughts. Let me ask you about whether CBT therapy, cognitive behavior therapy, is done in conjunction with medicine, with drugs.
So CBT, above all, is a very collaborative kind of therapy. And clients and therapists together make decisions about what to discuss in treatment, how much time to spend on certain topics, what the client is going to do between sessions. Many CBT therapists, in fact, most CBT therapists are not medical doctors. They're not psychiatrists. They're psychologists, social workers, counselors, people like that. And so we don't usually get involved in the client's medication per se, but we do help clients figure out what kind of thoughts they might want to ask the prescriber about medication. We also help them adjust to side effects of medication if that's necessary. Also, if they and their provider have decided that the client should taper from a medication, the client might have withdrawal effects, and we certainly will help clients with that, but we don't prescribe medication. Having said that, at the Beck Institute, we have clients oftentimes who have tried many different kinds of psychotherapy before, and yet they still have problems. And many of them are on quite a lot of medication. If a client isn't sure whether or not he or she wants to take medication, then we would ask them, well, would you like to look with me at what are the advantages and disadvantages of taking the medication, and what are the advantages and disadvantages of not taking the medication? And we might then also come up with a list of questions to ask the prescriber.
We're talking about cognitive behavior therapy with Dr. Judith Beck. She is the co-founder of the Beck Institute, which is dedicated, as I said earlier, to just improving people's lives through CBT. Dr. Beck, what else goes on at the Institute? You also train people in CBT?
Yes, we primarily do national and international training in CBT. So my dad and I established the Institute in 1994. And since then, we have trained about 40,000 people, all types of mental health professionals. And in recent years, we have begun training paraprofessionals and peer specialists, people with lived experience. And I should say, we've also trained a large number of people in the medical field, doctors, nurses, occupational therapists, rehab therapists, and so forth.
Well, that's great. It sounds as though you're saying that at some level of training, of course, a layperson could pick up the skills necessary to at least be able to discuss cognitive behavior with somebody who's troubled. Is that right?
No, that's absolutely right. And in fact, this is being done in such innovative ways in other countries. So there's a country in Africa, for example, that teaches some of the elder women in the community how to do problem solving and scheduling activities with depressed younger women. And they sit on a bench. It's called a friendship bench. The women come and sit and talk to them about it. So these are not highly trained people. In fact, they're not mental health professionals at all. But the techniques of CBT are pretty straightforward. One of the things we tell our own clients is that it's not enough just to come to treatment and talk for 45 minutes a week or so. They're going to learn things in every session, and they're going to practice these kind of techniques of changing their thinking and their behavior every day at home. And we tell them, you know, our goal is to make you your own therapist. And the way that people get better is by making small changes in their thinking and behavior every day.
Yeah. It sounds a lot like the origins of this are deeply rooted in community and folk remedies that existed in organizations where there were empathetic people, people trusted, that you could talk to.
Absolutely. And having a strong therapeutic relationship is absolutely crucial for cognitive behavior therapy, as it is for any kind of psychotherapy.
Well, tell me about that, because it would seem to me that what's critical here is that the patient or client gets the right therapist.
There does have to be a good match. I have to say, I think there's a lot of uniformity among people who practice CBT. Well, I think we tend to be really practical, nice people, and that's why we're really drawn to it. It really makes sense to us that we want to teach our clients, not only help them get better, but teach them skills so that they can stay better, so they won't have a recurrence of the condition or the disorder.
Well, I can see the allure of this thing. I know why it's widely used, and I know why people think it can be very, very beneficial, because there is something second nature about this, it seems to me, something that we do all the time on our own and don't think of it as therapy. Closing the refrigerator door and saying, I'll eat the ice cream later, doesn't sound like a therapeutic act, but it is.
You're right. And so much of this is common sense. Mm-hmm. When people first come to treatment, usually they're in a lot of distress. And one of the things we find out from them is what's really important to them in life and how do they want to be? How do they want their lives to be? And then at every session, we help them take steps toward that vision. And again, what gets in the way, sometimes they're practical problems. So you need to have a lot of common sense to be a good CBT therapist. And the other thing that frequently gets in the way, as we've been talking about all along, is unhelpful thinking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And both people, well, certainly the therapist, it's sort of a given that they would be rational, a reasonable person. But what happens, I want to circle back to this again, because when you're dealing with, let's say, a serious case of bipolar one, where the person's disorder, the very nature of the disorder, is telling them falsehoods, lies, and directing them towards destructive behavior. And the whole time, they're feeling great about it. They're feeling, and when approached by a reasonable person saying, you need to do X, Y, and Z here, their reaction is, and it's reasonable to them in their state, well, I don't want to do that. I won't feel like this anymore. How does CBT break down that?
So I'm going to give you a short answer, but we could spend several weeks just talking about this. The best time to work with someone who has mania, that's what you're describing, mm-hmm. someone who might be up for 5 or 6 days in a row and getting no sleep and having grandiose ideas and engaging in very risky behavior, having very, very rapid thinking thoughts that run through their mind. The best time to work with them on it is when they're either in a neutral mood or a slightly depressed mood. And then you're really doing relapse prevention. You're saying, let's talk about what are the early warning signs of mania, your early warning signs. Let's get down in writing a plan of what you can do when you notice these early warning signs happening. So you want all of that in writing. You also want to ask the client to predict what kinds of thoughts or what kind of situations might the client get involved with when they're manic that would then lead to some destructive behavior that they're going to be sorry for later. So they can look back at their history and see what's going on. And then we help them identify what kind of manic thinking they may have in those situations and what they want to be able to tell themselves the next time they have these kind of manic thoughts, and we make sure that that's all down in writing. And we very likely will have a family member or a friend come to at least one or more sessions if the client is willing, so that that person knows what to say.
And of course, the tricky thing here is applying all of those CBT techniques at a moment when the mania has subsided.
Yes.
And the deep depression that often follows has not kicked in.
Yeah.
It's very, as you know, it's very difficult to be in that sweet spot, because all of the questions and responses you as a clinician want to elicit from that person, you may be getting wrong information. They may be lying to you. They may be telling you things that aren't true, or I don't have any triggers, or what are you talking about? So
that's why it's helpful to have another person, if the client is willing, come to treatment.
You mean somebody who understands the situation?
Yeah. A close family member, okay. A close friend, and so forth.
And, you know, that's the tricky. I think that schizophrenia and things like that would be the most extreme examples of this. But as you mentioned in the beginning, CBT has been very effective over many years over such a wide range of behaviors, from anxiety to depression, and certainly phobias, right? I mean, phobias must be the perfect case when people have irrational fears, having grown up with some family members who weren't debilitated by some of these things, but, you know, didn't like getting in an elevator and were a little shaky going across the bridge in a car. Those sorts of things are really right in your wheelhouse, right?
And that's why, in order to test their fears, we need to do what we call exposure, having them get into the situation and not try to do anything to make their anxiety less, not try to do anything to make the situation better, but they need to find out once and for all whether their fears really come true. And you can talk about it intellectually with them, and they may have an intellectual understanding that spiders or most spiders are not harmful. But it's not until they actually are in the situation and allow themselves to stay in that situation till the anxiety comes down that they find out that their fears really are, I mean, they understand it at an intellectual level, but then they start to believe it at an emotional level once they've gone through the experience.
Yeah, it's so real world. And I correct me if I'm wrong, but in the CB area, it's less a question of, well, what childhood trauma is causing this stuff, and that's part of it for sure, but it seems to me CBT says to people, look, I know you're afraid of flying, why don't you take a short flight someplace and notice that everything will be fine, and when the plane lands you go, well, gee, that was okay. In other words, real world effects work better than
you have to sometimes build up to it.
Right.
We might start by just talking about taking an airline flight. Then we might start watching videos of what it's like to sit inside an airplane. And so when we're doing exposure, sometimes people are willing to just go for it. And sometimes we have to do it a little bit more gradually.
Yeah, you have to meet them where they are. Judith Beck, Dr. Judith Beck, our guest from the Beck Institute for Cognitive Behavioral Therapy. The mission is to spread the gospel of CBT training. And I take it that you in addition at the Institute, you take private patients?
We do. And we actually are now treating many patients via Zoom. So we find, and the research shows that CBT can be just about as effective with distance therapy as it is face-to-face therapy.
Yeah. Are you all private pay? How does it work at the Institute?
We are. We're located in Bala Cynwyd, right across city line.
Yeah, you're a neighbor. We do this from suburban Philadelphia on Chestnut Hill. More information about the Institute, as I said, beckinstitute.org for those of you who are in the area that have some direct interest, and others who just want to know more about cognitive behavioral therapy. I think at the very least, we found out that, you know, this is the kind of skill you can pick up yourself. wouldn't be a bad thing to have a handle on. And if you need help, there are professionals like Dr. Beck out there that can help you. Judy, right? I can call you Judy.
Yeah, of course.
Judy, thank you. I appreciate your time. We'd love to have you back. It's a big topic, and there are all kinds of different tangents that we can get into. And we appreciate your expertise and your time and your work.
Well, thank you. This is one of my favorite topics to talk about.
I'll bet. Thank you guys for your time as well. Don't forget, look for us wherever you find your podcasts, which are everywhere lying around. And when you find us, listen, like, subscribe, do the whole thing. The Behavioral Corner. We will catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Millions of Americans are negatively affected daily by their mental health. Retreat has served the community for over 10 years, offering comprehensive mental health programming through our mental health division, Synergy Health Programs. To learn more about Synergy, please reach out today at 855-802-6600.
That's it for now. And make us a habit, hanging out at the Behavioral Corner. And when we're not hanging, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter on The Behavioral Corner.